I'm gonna switch gears a little bit, and I'm actually gonna focus more on some of the microbiology going on. And this is, I want to share with you some very, very, very preliminary data on a project that I'm really excited about with something called biological soil crusts. And so, a little background: these are commonly found in desert ecosystems. They're what we consider sort of organosedimentary assemblages of a bunch of different bacteria and fungi and some higher organisms, but are dominated by cyanobacteria. I mean, that's their key characterization, is that these are really cyanobacteria-driven groups. And in desert ecosystems, they can represent up to 70% of the living ground cover. And they're specially adapted to the arid and extreme environment where basically, they are only active right after it rains. And so it'll rain, everything turns green, they really crank out their activity, and then they slowly decrease in activity as precipitation decreases. They're found in all over the world in dry land and arid ecosystems. They're definitely found in all of the major desert areas of the southwestern U.S. There are some differences in overall microbial community makeup, but what's interesting is that they all, even though they have some differences in their key dominant organisms within the cyanobacteria within the other groups, their function is very similar. So this is work that I did a number of years ago looking at the nitrogen cycle of these organisms. And so in each of these different deserts, we have the rates of nitrogen fixation and ammonia oxidation, which are in white and light gray, and then denitrification. And you can see that regardless of the desert, which all have slightly different climatic regions as well, nitrogen fixation and ammonia oxidation are the dominant roles. And so in these desert ecosystems, these soil crusts are basically considered one of the main inputs of nitrogen into soils. So what does this have to do with agriculture? So I studied that actually a number of years ago for my dissertation, and then I moved into agriculture, and I started at University of Florida about a year and a half ago, and I had a grower come to me, a grove manager in a citrus grove. He's got, I've got this trial, or it's a rootstock trial that's being repeated somewhere else in the state. These are roughly three-year-old trees. My trees are already starting to bear fruit, which is very unusual at that age, and are doing much better than this other trial. And I noticed this black stuff on the ground. You're a soil microbiologist. What is this? To which I said, well, let me look. And it turns out it is a biological soil crust. And so I was very excited about this because the last time I saw them was in a very, very different setting. And so I wanted to try and characterize it and take a look at what's really going on here. And that given what we know about them in these desert ecosystems, this could play a really nice role in agroecosystems. It's a really nice integration of microbial communities that are from the local area as opposed to bringing in microbes from somewhere else, which is a common theme these days. Given what we know about them in desert ecosystems with their nitrogen production, this could be a really nice source of fertilizer, basically, which would help. So, and particularly also with Florida, I'm not sure how much you know about Florida soils, particularly in the southwest area where a lot of citrus is being grown, but it's basically beach sand. It's really, really low in organic matter, really low in most nutrients in general. And so anything that can be done to add even just a little bit of organic matter would be a big deal for farmers and growers out there. And then in desert ecosystems, they're also been shown to have some reduction in erosion just because this is basically mat that's holding down the soil, and can improve water retention, which again, for a very sandy soil, is not a trivial thing. So we collected some samples from this grove in February and in August, and looked at their nitrogen cycling rates. And so I've got the biological soil crusts, and then we also sampled some non-crusted soil within the region. And we measured potential ammonia oxidation, which is in red. We did light and dark end fixation. I'm only showing light, but the rates were very similar. And then denitrification. You can see in both time points, nitrogen fixation and ammonia oxidation were dominant. And in fact, actually in August when we collected soils, denitrification rates were basically non-detectable. So these are really cranking through, or at least for the crust, active in nitrogen cycling and generating nitrogen, which is interesting because these are groves that are actively being fertilized. You would sort of think that there wouldn't be ecologically a reason for this nitrogen fixation activity going on, but clearly there it is. So there's maybe the fertilization timing, or this is something we still want to look into. But definitely behaving at least in the same manner as those biological soil crusts that we see in desert ecosystems. And they do seem to be contributing to overall soil nutrient concentrations. This is carbon, nitrogen in the middle, and phosphorus. And we've got the crusts in green and the non-crusted soil in orange. And you can see for all of these major nutrients, there is greater concentrations in these soil crusts. Again, we also saw greater moisture retention. And so, again, in February and in August, the crusts do retain additional moisture compared to the non-crusted soil. And again, these groves are irrigated on a semi-regular basis. They're less irrigated. They're not often irrigated much in the summer and during August, mostly because it rains every day. But during February, they are irrigated a couple times a week. And so it's interesting to see this difference right away. So what's also interesting is looking at the actual bacterial community composition of these crusts. Unfortunately, the data that corresponds to the August measurements, I wasn't able to get back from the sequencing center yet. But I did collect some samples from a number of different citrus groves in the general area and looked at an initial composition. This is 16S sequence data. And you can see that in all of these samples, they are dominated by cyanobacteria, right here, which again is consistent with soil crusts that we see in desert ecosystems. What's also interesting is, again, these two samples, sample one and two, are from the same citrus grove. These are from two other groves that I actually didn't even do any of those end transformation measurements, but I was out collecting samples and I said, well, let's throw them into the pot. And again, there are some differences, but the overall pattern of their composition is very similar, which sort of leads us to at least hypothesize that these are locally adapted communities, that this is coming from somewhere in the general region. There are some biological soil crust-like things in the Everglades that have been reported, and so we think maybe that's part of where this is coming from, but that's a whole other study that we'd love to do as well. And then within the cyanobacteria, they're dominated by, again, a number of organisms that are also found in the biological soil crust of the deserts. So nostox and cyanobinas and all of these are found commonly in desert biological soil crusts, and we're seeing them here as well. And several of these are known to be nitrogen fixing. So, as I said, these are all preliminary data, but what we're really excited about is if we do some really, really rough, very back-of-the-envelope calculations, no, this is not going to replace fertilizer. But even if growers could save just a tenth of the nitrogen that they need to apply to their citrus groves, that would be a big deal for them these days, particularly in Florida on citrus. With citrus greening, any additional fertilizer and nutrient availability is a benefit, and any small amount of money the growers can save is a benefit. And so this could be very nice for them. Like I said, again, they do seem to be having greater soil carbon concentrations, which, as we all know, increased soil carbon is generally a good thing, and from a microbiology standpoint, that usually increases soil diversity, which can have a whole number of implications for soil health. And then what's interesting that I've been looking into a little bit more detail is the use of cyanobacteria in agroecosystems, and there's some been interesting reports of cyanobacteria producing a whole slew of different plant growth promoting compounds. which could be a really interesting role in promoting root growth and root health, which, again, for citrus trees in particular these days, is very important. So that could be an even tertiary benefit for having these cyanobacterial-dominated communities growing right underneath your trees. And then, as I mentioned, moisture retention is also potentially really helpful for these citrus groves and keeping the irrigation events less frequent. So, as I mentioned, this is preliminary data. There's a lot of stuff that we don't know, more that we don't know than we do know, but we're excited by this potential. And so what we're interested in looking at is starting to characterize the nitrogen cycling, not just within these citrus groves, but in talking with other collaborators and even other growers in the area. I've had a number, I've now sort of showed the slide of, if you've seen this, tell me. Who've said, yeah, we see this stuff in our groves and in our farms. We've always seen this. We just never really gave it another thought. So I think this is really common and widespread. And so, but I think it's also something we should start looking at. And so I'm really curious to see how this cycling is occurring in other agrosystems and how it compares. I have a collaborator who's interested in looking at this actually in some no-till field, wheat fields in eastern Oregon, eastern Washington. Which is obviously a completely different setup from a citrus grove, but they're there as well. And so are they playing a similar role in nitrogen cycling? As I mentioned, we want to look at the factors that are driving the growth. So can we potentially basically bring these to systems where they aren't there and locally, inoculate the soil, basically? And then what we haven't done yet is to do a direct examination of how they're actually influencing crop growth. But given these parameters and given these potential results, it looks like they certainly could potentially play a role. So that, I will take a couple questions.
So forgive me if I missed it, but you started this by saying that the grower came to you and said, well, I've got this early fruiting in my orchard,
right,
and here these things are. So are they present in the other orchard, and what did you tell the grower?
well, I said to the grower, thank you, let me get back to you, and I get going back and collecting samples from him. I have not had a chance. The other grove is a number of hours away, and so I haven't had a chance to go look at it.
You don't know if it's there.
I don't know if it's there. I haven't seen it. It is further north. And so I haven't seen and heard as many reports of this further north as I have in the southwest area of Florida. But that's an excellent thing that we need to look at. So, and they haven't actually started harvesting those trials, so we don't have the yield data yet either. So. Sure.
What do you think are the conditions that would favor the growth of the crust or the appearance of one orchard versus another?
That's a good question. So at this point, I'm not really certain. Certainly, I would have thought, disturbance and all of these things. I mean, the desert ecosystems, these are really fragile systems, and they can be easily disturbed just by stepping on them. These groves are getting lots of traffic, and they even got herbicided not too long ago, but right before, a couple months before I did the August sampling, and they're still there. So I feel like the resiliency of these systems is very different. Why that's the case, I'm not so sure yet. I mean, it's certainly a pampered environment. There is fertilizer, there is regular water, there are a lot of these nice inputs, but there's obviously still some sort of ecological benefit for them to be growing there.
Have you looked at the muck soils to see if there's
crust? Not yet.
Okay, because
yeah.
I'm just trying to think, because I work in sugarcane.
Uh-huh.
And there are some of the growers, the sugarcane growers also grow citrus, and it's kind of a transitional zone. I'll be curious to see if within those sands, muck transitional zone, if you see this stuff.
Yeah. I will say we have noticed, and one thing that we're sort of thinking is that these are colonizing areas where it's, for whatever reason, it's harder for maybe a weed or something to grow in. And so potentially these are like the initial colonizers. And it would be really interesting to look at this from a sort of successional standpoint. But we haven't gotten that far yet. So time for one more quick question, then we'll move on. Yeah.
So you see a very high nitrification potential in your electrocrust than the others. And also you show that there seems to be no difference in the composition positions. So would you say the nitrifer activities are higher in the crust?
Definitely. Okay. Definitely, yes. All right. Thank you, guys.